Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And love letters have a place in every life, and we can talk about that later. But I want to go right to my guests now. And Stacy Millich and John Geiselbrecht are here with a personal story to tell and a challenge to overcome in some way or other. And Stacy, I'm just going to go to you, and you start about you and John.
Okay. John and I actually met when we were 19 and 20 years old. We were pretty lucky because we found each other pretty early in life.
How did you meet?
We met at Las Palmas Park. A good friend of John's was a waiter at Sizzler, mm-hmm. and he invited me to go to a park after hours.
With the intent of meeting John?
No.
Oh, good. Okay.
That was
just curious if it was a successful fix-up. Okay, go ahead.
And John was there, mm-hmm. and John has a sense of humor that is unique in all kinds of different ways, and I knew right away that I wanted to be around that life and humor mm-hmm. For as long as I could.
Did he ask you out right away?
No, I had to chase him a little
bit. Oh, good, okay. Good for you.
Yeah.
I'll say, go ahead about your life then together.
So we sort of look at it like we really grew up together because 25 years together, we've both changed a lot. We've been very privileged in that we both have had great lives with wonderful family and friends. John is a teacher at a middle school, teaches math. And
oh, my favorite. Go ahead.
And fulfilling work. And I also am a teacher. I teach at Cuesta College. And we have just wonderful friends and family. We've been able to travel to Europe and Africa and Asia and really have led a pretty wonderful life.
And when you say you've both changed over 25 years, can you talk about that for a little bit?
Well, we certainly aren't nearly as wild as we were when we were young. Uh-huh. And I think also part of growing up is learning that you have to take care of one another, and we become much kinder and gentler and better at taking care of each other over the years, I think. We don't argue like we used to.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. And?
And then on May the 8th mm-hmm. of this year, John was feeling like he was having trouble swallowing food and went to talk to his doctor. And his doctor basically said, sometimes as you get older, your esophagus narrows, and probably what we'll do is go and dilate the esophagus. It'll all be good, and it'll be an outpatient type of thing. And that's not what ended up happening. John was told by the GI doctor that he'd hear in a couple of days because mm-hmm. They had seen a biopsy, whether, you know, there was anything to worry about.
Wait, they do that right away? I mean, the process is sometimes educational here. So when you went in for them to dilate, they also did a biopsy?
No. Oh, well, yeah. Actually, they did. I went in to get the dilation, and then they...
Automatic. Okay.
Yeah, and they scoped it. Mm-hmm. They had the scope, and they realized that there was no need for a dilation.
Oh, okay.
So they put the scope further down into my stomach and realized mm-hmm. that I had a tumor in my stomach, which was later diagnosed as stomach cancer.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah, and we had thought, well, that was one of the first of many series of times where we moved to the front of the line. And, you know, in most things in life, moving to the front of the line is a very good thing.
Yes.
Well, in the medical field, that is a very bad thing.
Well, it's a bad sign.
Right. They told him.
But you're not being ignored.
Right. So it's a good thing. But
in a bad situation.
Right.
Yes.
John had thought we'd hear in 3 to 4 days, and he got a call to come in the very next day. And it was serious. The cancer was in John's stomach. It had also gotten outside the stomach into lymph nodes and into some ligaments. And that started the process of basically figuring out what do you do when you've been diagnosed with cancer.
And what do you do?
Well, you first kind of go into shock, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't really know what to do. You have to think about how you're going to tell your family and your work and, you know.
Did you just need time off and away to process all this? I mean, did you have to go to work the next day?
Yeah, I went to work the next day and actually received the phone call at work.
Oh, I see.
What the situation was.
Yes.
So, yeah, there wasn't really a lot of downtime to really think about things because everything was moving so fast. So, you know, you speak with family and you're speaking with doctors and you're talking to the school district.
Do you feel like it's a responsibility to tell family? I mean, you have to be gentle with them?
Well, it's not necessarily that you have to be gentle with them. You just have to tell them. Mm-hmm. You know, you feel like your family members have the right to know what's going on. So that was difficult, letting them know that you're sick. Because, you know, as soon as you tell somebody something like that, you know, there's going to cause a lot of worry and concern. And people don't really know what to do when you tell them something like that.
Right. And they treat you differently, I'm guessing.
Yeah, they treat you differently. You know, there's a lot of sympathy and a lot of good wishes. And, you know, it's a little awkward being on that end of a conversation all the time. But, you know, all the people that do those things, when they do treat you differently, it's because they care about you and they want to do well. So.
Now, I mean, I have a question. So was the next step to go in for surgery or some kind of a treatment? What happens, Stacey, after that?
Well, we went and met with a doctor who told us the plan was going to be to, and this was up at Stanford, to actually remove John's stomach. Mm-hmm. And they believed if they took out his stomach and the lymph nodes surrounding it, that they would be able to resect the cancer. Mm-hmm. But before they did that, they wanted John to do 9 weeks of very aggressive chemotherapy to try to shrink the tumor as much as they could. And so we went and met with the chemo nurse and started talking about the process of chemotherapy, which, you know, people are pretty familiar, I think, with the physical piece of chemo.
Feeling sick, you mean?
That people know about the nausea and they know about the physical side effects. But the emotional piece for me was harder. Obviously, I didn't endure the physical part. But you have this realization that your spouse or your loved one is being poisoned, essentially. And it's very hard to get your head around this idea that all of this awful stuff that's happening to somebody else's body and you feel helpless to do anything about it. And for a spouse, that's very, very challenging because you usually in life are able to help in some way and there's just really nothing.
So what's the best thing a spouse can do?
I think for us, it was just to communicate as much and as often as we could because, you know, I debated, do I let John know when I'm feeling upset because he's got enough to deal with. He doesn't need to take on my pain as well. And I think initially I tried very hard not to sort of let John know how I was feeling. But we soon realized that we did so much better together and as a team. And, you know, we used to, when we first got married, I used to like to watch those Lifetime movies that are so sad, you know, that everybody cries.
Oh, and the girl movies on Channel 46.
Yeah. And John would come home and I'd just be crying my eyes out. And he would say, "What, you know, Stacey, what's wrong?" And I would say, "Oh, it's just this program." And so we started calling it, you know, emotional programming.
So I'm curious about something. Because you were more on the surface ready to cry, obviously, did these movies make you cry? So did you always cry at these movies?
Well, I don't watch them anymore, but what I was getting at is we decided that our life now is just emotional programming.
Oh, yes. You never sort of know. So I have a question, John. I just never thought of it before, but when Stacey's talking about letting you know how she feels and not wanting to originally because she didn't want to add that to your burden of having to do, is there such a thing as just accepting somebody's anxiety and not feeling you have to do something about it?
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of the times you can't do anything about it. So it's really easy just to accept it.
So you could do that.
Yeah, I could do that.
So you know, it wasn't one more thing on your list of what to handle. Okay.
Well, I wouldn't say there was definitely one more thing on the list to handle.
But I mean that you knew that you couldn't make her
feel better about the situation?
Well, you probably could make her feel better in some ways. You say.
Well, the reason that, you know, the way that Stacy was able to feel better about things is just me being honest about how I was feeling each day. And, you know, we talked every single night about how things were going. And
you went through the 9 weeks of chemotherapy.
Yes.
And then did you have the surgery?
I did. I had a surgery on August 21st, and the doctor during the surgery came to the conclusion that my cancer had spread too much to actually go through with the surgery. So I actually had the surgery, but the procedure that they had planned on performing was not done.
I see.
So they just closed me back up. And
and I have an odd question
for you.
To ask. You look wonderful.
Thank you.
And
you, I agree.
So, I mean, I'm just, with all that you've gone through, and with your description of how the cancer has spread, why do you look wonderful?
Well, that's what all my doctors keep wondering.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I went through the chemotherapy pretty easily, as a matter of fact.
So you can be sick with something and still be functioning well and...
Well, that was my case. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk to people that go through this, and everybody has a different story. But you know, the way they've been doing chemotherapy the last few years, they have a lot of advancements with chemotherapy, and you know, you go into the chemotherapy room with all these other people that are getting treatments the same as yours, or you know, similar to yours, and the people look pretty good. You know, so
that's good to know. And is there a maintenance that you can just keep on this for as long as, how does that work?
Well, yeah, what happens now is I just finished up another 9 weeks of chemotherapy a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So what happens now is you just go on a really, really low dose of chemotherapy for as long as you can in the form of pills.
And who knows that can be for a long time.
Well, that's what we're hoping. And we're hoping that, you know, we can, you know, we call it just living with cancer.
Yes.
Is the way that, you know, we approach this, where, you know, you just take this medicine and treat it like you would, like any other chronic disease, you know, like diabetes.
That is a really important thing. That's a really wonderful thing to hear. And I don't know if everybody in the world knows this. So when you talk about, you see it as living with cancer, it used to be, even when I was a girl, people would talk about dying of cancer. Mm-hmm. And now you hear more and more living with.
Right. Well, yeah, there's, you know, a lot of advancements with the medicines that they have. Mm-hmm. You know, people are living longer with cancer. My particular type of cancer isn't really well known for that.
But still.
But, you know, we're hoping that in the next year and a half, that there's some advancements that are made that can help me out and other people out. And
that's the thing about every day you're here. There's another possibility of a possibility.
That's right.
Okay, so tell me about the foundation that you started.
Well, actually, we didn't start the foundation.
Oh, okay. So tell us about it.
Well, we had been connected with the Gastric Cancer Foundation.
Oh, I see.
John has gastric cancer, and a sorority sister of mine knew a woman on the board whose husband had passed away from this disease. So we got connected very early on, and she had reached out to us and was really a great resource throughout, because we believed John wasn't going to have a stomach and that we would have to learn how to live without a stomach, how to eat, how to survive. Mm-hmm. So she was helping very much with that.
Well, because she has that condition? She lives without a stomach?
No, her husband had for a period of 5 years.
Oh, okay.
And then he passed away from
the disease. I'm sorry, I missed that part. Yes,
no,
okay.
No problem. And so she had connected us with Gastric Cancer Foundation, and really it was just kind of a resource for us at the beginning. And then what happened was they had read some of the entries that John and I had made for family and friends on a Caring Bridge website. And their public relations person was impressed with John's sentiment and asked John if he would speak at the gala event, which is happening on December 6th.
Okay, so tell us what that sentiment was.
What
is it that you had said that she was taken by?
Well, Well, first of all, Caring Bridge is a website where you can post things. It's very similar to a blog.
Oh,
about
I see. Okay.
What you know, people are going through.
Mm-hmm.
And then people can check in and read about, you know, what the latest announcement is.
Mm-hmm.
And I had taken the time to write, you know, a blog, for so to speak, just to let everybody know what was going on with my life and what was going on with Stacy. And just, you know, talk about what we just spoke of earlier about living with it and making the best of things and how everything we thought, you know, was going to be okay and thought of it as more of an inconvenience than anything else, and that we would sooner or later get used to it.
So that your next step from that is you were asked to speak at the gala?
Yeah, so somebody had read that, and then, yeah, I was invited to speak at this gala, which is coming up on December
6th. And is this something that the public may come to, or is this an internal kind of an event?
Well, I believe it's mostly an internal type of event, but I know that you can buy seats to sit at a table. I mean,
it's
a fundraiser. Yeah, I believe it's open to the public.
So tell us the website, please.
It's gastriccancerfoundation.org. It's gastriccancerfoundation.org.
Okay, thank you. The reason I do that is, you know, one letter off and you're in Nevermind's country.
Right.
Okay.
And so.
And what is the goal of this organization?
The goal is to find a cure or treatment options for gastric cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And the gastric cancer gets a very small portion of federal funding toward cancer diseases. It's actually only 0.04% of all the federal funding. And so their goal is to try to come up with treatment options and also a cure at some point. And I thought...
Oh, so treatment options. Okay, that's important, because when people are looking for just a cure, if cure is the only goal, it can't help anybody yet.
Right.
Okay.
So, for example, in other cancers, they're using what they call immunotherapy, which is where a individual, like for lung cancer, your body evidently doesn't fight cancer. It doesn't recognize it as a threat. And so chemotherapy goes in and kills the cancer cells as well as other cells. Well, immunotherapy actually teaches your body to fight itself. So instead of poisoning your body, the medicine actually teach your body to fight the cancer.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And so they've had people who've been living with cancer for a very long period of time doing this immunotherapy. And so these foundations are able to raise money for research into those types of options. And gastric cancer, they don't have an immunotherapy yet.
Because no one has looked into it, because it's not as common?
Correct. Well, it's very common worldwide. It just is not a cancer that's funded in the United States very well. And so Gastric Cancer Foundation is working with Stanford Hospital to try to find new therapies and also a cure ultimately.
And what would you say, I mean, if you were just talking to people to be encouraging for other families who have a family member who's been diagnosed with this, is there anything you would want to say?
Well, I would say that sometimes there's just no right thing to say. And the challenge is, I think, just listening to and taking cues from the sick person or their spouse.
As a spouse and a family member. What about in social settings? I want to ask you, because, you know, you mentioned that people see you differently and treat you. What do you want in a social setting with people?
Well, the social setting with people, you know, what happens when you're diagnosed with having cancer is, you know, everybody, you know, you get a lot of phone calls, you get a lot of letters, you get a lot of emails, and that dies off after a little bit. And,
is that a good thing?
Yeah, it's a good thing, but, you know, it's also a really great thing to hear from all those people, because you really, you know, realize that there's a lot of people out there that care for you, and, you know, you would never have ever heard any of those things had you not been diagnosed with cancer. So, you know, we refer to that as, you know, one of cancer's gifts, you mm-hmm. know. So there have been a couple good things that have come as, okay. being, you know, a result of being diagnosed with this. But in a social setting, you know, you like the past 6-7 months, you don't feel like you live a normal life. You know, everybody keeps going to work and everybody, you know.
Are you still working?
I just went back to work last week, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
So for me, really what I wanted is just to have a life of normalcy.
That's what I'm getting at. That's
yeah.
what I'm, yeah.
So it's
the
nice.
The next dinner party should be a regular dinner party where you talk about everything
yeah,
in the world.
Yeah, normal things.
Yes.
And that's been happening lately. You know,
oh, good.
We celebrated Thanksgiving last night with my side of the family. And, you know, it didn't even come up, which was great. So it felt
yes.
really, really normal. So
normalcy is important.
Yeah, it is important. So feels like you're part
yes.
of, you know, society.
And the truth is you're still here.
And I'm still here. But I also understand the need for people to want to know things, you know,
I would guess that's different. If people have an honest need to want to know things, mm-hmm. I'm guessing that's okay with you.
Yeah, that's okay with me. I've never kept this a secret
right.
from anybody. Anybody who wants to ask me about it is...
But if they're awkward
to.
And don't know what to say.
Oh, yeah. People don't know what to say. So,
I've seen that with friends. That's just awful.
Well, it can be awful. You know, some people say some really, really bizarre things. most people just say the same thing. It's like, oh, I'm really sorry that you're going through this, or, you know, you're in our prayers, and, you know, those types of things.
Yeah. But then you don't. And I'm also asking, I shouldn't say, I'm really asking, you don't want to have to live in a petri dish filled with, we're looking at you and watching your every move.
No, not really.
yeah.
But,
okay.
Yeah, not,
so I just think
not
that's,
at all.
I think that's important to say. If somebody's not well, they're not well, that's not their whole life.
Well, yeah, that's true. Well, it's difficult for people because they want to help out.
Yes.
You know, so... It's very difficult for people to help out if mm-hmm. they don't initiate that conversation.
Now, you're a math teacher, and your students are how old?
They're 13, 14 years old.
And so they know that you've been away. They know why you've been away.
Oh, yeah, they know. I told all of them what I was going through last May.
Yes.
And I had to take the last 4 or 5 weeks off of work.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they knew. I told all their parents, and I told, you know, the teaching staff
so
and the school
yeah.
district
yeah.
and the whole thing. Yeah, it was a little weird. But
well, let me ask you something, because... I am about love letters, and I have to say that at all, my own experience in this has been that at all times in life, no matter what the circumstance, what the experience, there are the seeds of a love letter to someone. And I'm listening to the two of you, and I can come out with about 18 of them already. So you said, John, that you write letters sometimes. What kind of letters do you write when you do?
Well, recently I just write letters because I want people to... know that I'm thankful for what they've done for me. And
so you write them and mail them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I like writing on paper with
a
pen.
Oh, good. Okay. I was going to ask that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And stick it in an envelope.
And stick it in an envelope
wonderful.
And put a stamp on it. So yeah, I've been corresponding with an aunt of mine that I haven't talked to probably 20 years.
Oh, my goodness.
I write, when this all happened, I write my mom, I write my dad, I wrote my sister, wrote my in-laws, you know.
Yes.
Because you really feel... the urge to thank people for all that they've done. Because people have been really, really supportive and helpful throughout.
And of course,
this, so.
the extended side of that is you're writing just in an honest, authentic, wanting to express your gratitude for something.
Yeah, exactly.
And for their being in your life, whatever it is, anything specific. But, you know, in years to come, what do you think those letters will serve? I mean, people keep love letters.
Yeah, I know they keep the letters, so, you know, and I think about that every time I put the date at the top of the letter.
Oh, good.
So,
okay, that's so important. People, yes.
Yeah, I know people are going to be keeping these letters, and at some point later in life, maybe their kids will be reading the letters. So
yes.
So it's an interesting
process,
right? You
can process, have my workshop right? and just do it. You can just take it. Putting the date is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's just a little piece of history,
yes,
really,
it is.
Of, you know, what people meant to me and... was going on at the time. And
exactly. And it's even part of medical history. You know, if that's found in 300 years, and we have letters that look like they were written yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Any message you send on a video or that's gone in 12 years because the technology will be such that nobody can access it. Mm-hmm. But those letters will be forever. The other thing is that there is a likelihood that you're going to be here in a whole bunch of years.
Yeah, that's definitely possible.
And you'll get to see them.
Well, I hope so.
Yes. But and to look back and to get even a somehow a different view of your own life.
Yeah, that would be interesting to go back and read some of those letters.
Do you have letters that you've ever written before from your young? I've been taught that I'm not allowed to say younger or older anymore.
Well, you know, it's, when Stacey and I first started dating, we went our separate ways for college. So I stayed in the Bay Area. I went to De Anza Junior College, and Stacey transferred to a state college. So we wrote letters for about a year during that time, and then
and you still have those?
Oh yeah,
I do.
I'm sure I have them somewhere.
That's okay if she hasn't seen them. This is wonderful, but I need a television moment, people, because I wish you could see just the expression on this beautiful face, even at the thought of those love letters. Okay.
And we always leave, you know, little notes around the house. You know,
oh, good. Okay. Because handwriting is king. Nobody has your handwriting. Everybody's got Lucida Bright.
Nobody has my handwriting. That's absolutely true.
And you know, over time, when those letters are found, either by you or by your nieces and nephews or by you, they're going to have something in their hand that has felt the touch of your hand.
I never thought of it that way, but yeah, you're right.
It's like holding hands across decades where you couldn't in personal physical. What about you? So if you were to write a love letter right now, Stacey?
Well, my love letter, you know, the obvious person I'd write it to is John, but since I've done that many, many times and over certainly the last 6 months, we've given each other many, many love letters. Mine would be to all of the individuals who have supported us over the last 6 months with emails and texts and phone calls and gifts and just wonderful, beautiful offers. But also we have a webpage that we started for donations to the Gastric Cancer Foundation.
Yes. Okay. Tell us that then.
And what we've done is when John learned that he was going to be speaking, I was thinking it would be very challenging for him to speak in front of oncologists and surgeons and research people about this very personal story. And so I wanted something that reflected all of the people who have been supporting us over the last 6 months. And so we asked people if they would like to donate to a web page. And the idea is we're going to bring a big giant check to the gala event and give it to Gastric Cancer Foundation. Mm-hmm. The check says from John's friends and family. And we started it. It's almost been 30 days now, and we're at about $36,000. And these are donations from anywhere from $25 to $1,000 from students, and it's just over 220 people, I think, have donated at this point. So my love letter would be, I don't even know how to express gratitude for that.
Yeah, friends we haven't seen in 20, 25 years, you know.
Yes.
You know, through all the social media connections, you know, the links get passed around. And we just received a donation from a guy I went to elementary school with. And I haven't seen him. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I'd recognize him on the street.
Uh-huh.
You know, but there it was.
That's wonderful. So what is that? That's so significant somehow. That, you know, you think you have forever to get in touch with somebody. And nobody has forever. Because forever.
Because time goes on. Yeah. People.
And then you get a reminder and you realize, okay, forever, it should be today.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's really wonderful to hear from all these people. And it kind of comes back to what we were talking to earlier when you had mentioned, you know, what are people's reactions and what do they do when you tell them? And what's been great about this website is it gives somebody an opportunity to help out in really what is really a helpless situation for people other than saying, you know, good luck or, you know, we wish you well, you know, those types of things.
That's a really nice point.
To go to the website and feel like they're making a difference.
So you're making it possible for others to be successful.
Yeah, for others to be successful, to help us, you know, emotionally and to be supportive, but to also, you know, raise funds to, you know, find a cure for this disease and the hopes that, you know, somebody else doesn't have to go through this because, you know, somebody else is going to go through this. So it's terrific. It gives people an opportunity to help out.
So say again that your website where people can go, and if you would like to, you know, take part in this and make a donation, or are there places for messages also?
Yes.
Okay.
And many people have actually thanked us for starting the webpage and giving them an opportunity to help, which is interesting.
I don't think so. I think people want to help and they want to be successful and be able to do something positive.
Yeah. So I think the easiest way to get there is to go to the Gastric Cancer Foundation,
which I've already mentioned.
And then all you just do is go to the fundraising page and you'll see my name, Stacy Millich. It's Stacy Millich. And you just click the link and can make a donation if you would like to do so.
Oh, thank you both for doing this. This is just so important to share this. And I'm so glad that you were so willing to do it and know how important it is.
Well, it's nice to have this opportunity.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
And this is until next time I speak with you, Janet Gallen, saying goodbye. And please remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, every moment is a special occasion to write one to someone if you just have your eyes and heart open. And I want to ask you just, I know that you don't live here, so I can't just grab you next week. But as life goes on, and you have something else to share, just let me know and come back and do an update with us.
Yeah,
just wanted to make
great.
That invitation to you both.
Yeah, I will definitely check in with you.
Thank you, dears.
Know.
Bye for now.